Hello, this is Terrence McNally. Welcome to another episode of Free Forum, A World That Just Might Work. I'm recording this commentary on Tuesday, November 26th.
We've been celebrating 50th anniversaries this year. Woodstock and the moon landing are probably the most iconic, and rightfully so. They represent two very different manifestations of the energy and the culture of that year and of much of the 60s. Other anniversaries, Stonewall riots, the trial of the Chicago Eight, the premiere of Sesame Street, the invention of the microprocessor, opening the way for the computer revolution, and the creation of ARPANET, the predecessor of the internet, and the Vietnam moratorium. The BBC says the peace moratorium is believed to have been the largest demonstration in U.S. history, with an estimated 2 million people involved, since surpassed by the first women's march in January 2017. The focal point was Washington, D.C., where about 250,000 demonstrators gathered to make their voices heard, and another 500,000 marched a month later on November 15th. In Boston, Senator Ted Kennedy called for combat troops to be withdrawn from Vietnam within the next year and all forces by the end of 1972. Well, Chappaquiddick also took place in 1969, and the Manson murders, and Altamont. It's also the year I graduated college. So what about 2019? Mass demonstrations in Hong Kong are big news, but they're also taking to the streets in Santiago, Chile, Cairo, Moscow, Puerto Rico, the Extinction Rebellion in the UK. Greta Thunberg led climate strikes in the US and around the globe in September. Is it at all helpful at this time to talk about something I call 60s 2.0? I see in millennials and younger a lot of the values, ideas, and energies that lose nothing of their uniqueness, their timeliness, or their value if I say that they echo the 1960s. We all know our better angels have been in retreat. The generation that helped end a war and make a corrupt president resign has lost its way. Americans of my generation have not been good enough stewards of democracy. Authoritarianism has real advantages when confronting big problems that call for rapid pivots and mobilization. What FDR could do during World War II, China can do every day, and this is not a secret. Unless democracy becomes a more successful force for good in confronting climate change, China will lead the world forward and hopefully save the planet in the process. You see, there's even more at stake in our confrontation with climate change than the survival of human society. Also at stake is how that human society organizes itself moving forward. I want us to come up with a better story, one in which we transform democracy into a social force less focused on battles between interests competing over the profits of the game of politics and more on solving existential problems, treating the crises we face with the respect they deserve. Climate change, first of all. Lester Brown, longtime head of World Watch, has been saying for years that turning things around fast enough will require mobilization of a scope and at a speed to rival World War II. And the advocates of the Green New Deal loudly and clearly say the same thing. And we must provide opportunity, resources, and support to the people who will bring that story to life. State socialism failed, and state capitalism is falling short. We've got to reimagine a way for more of society to feel ownership, to share in the wealth and the direction. Maybe it's through cooperatives, decentralization. And kids get this. When was the last time the United States solved a big problem? We're good at convenience and profit, though even that may not be true, judging by a lot of young companies, WeWork and Uber, in the news recently. Maybe what we're good at is promise. But we've consistently let our technological evolution outpace our moral, ethical, and political evolution. The internet and big tech now threaten our individual wills as well as the quality of our democracy. Why have we let that happen? Young people see that we've accepted bringing them up with a less than successful childcare and education system. And if they're able to go to college, we've saddled them with often crippling debt, limiting their ability to take chances and to flourish. A society needs young people taking chances. And if that's how poorly we've managed the asset that they and their peers represent, how short-term and misguided our incentives and our thinking are, why should we be trusted to solve big problems like climate, inequality, social injustice, and the weakening of democracy? The notion I mentioned of 60s 2.0, is it valid? Is it useful? Could it catch on? I don't know. But I think that the question of how generations can work together to restore democracy, expand justice, and confront climate is a worthy one. I was born in New Bedford, Mass., a poor gray town that lost its textile mills to right-to-work states in the South. My family moved, first to Texas, then settling in Florida, two states on the rise. I graduated from the high school closest to Cape Canaveral in 1965 at the height of the space program. This reflection grows out of my personal experience as someone whose high school was integrated in my sophomore year, 8 blacks in a school of 2,500, who learned of JFK's assassination in 6th period algebra class and RFK's at 3 in the morning while tripping on LSD in a Harvard dorm, who started an alternative high school, worked for the McGovern campaign, lived in and out of my van for a few years, farmed organically, adopted lifelong yoga and meditation practices, and produced a documentary on Buckminster Fuller all by the year 1973. The more time I spend with young people these days, the more I get the feeling that some of the questions, visions, and values that emerged in the 1960s are alive again today. What I mean is the best of the 60s. Of course, there was excess. There was darkness. There was foolishness. But there were some emergent values and visions that still have merit and that are called for in this moment. Community, justice, questioning consumption, questioning competition, valuing balance, small is beautiful, decentralization, though today's tech giants explode both of those in a big way. The social contract, sharing, dropping out of the dominant economic or professional system, expanding civil rights, adding LGBTQ this time, ending the war on drugs, organic and regenerative agriculture, renewable energy, learning from nature, honoring spirit, with or without religion, slowing down, being mindful, money not the most important thing, war is a last resort, our leaders are not to be trusted, not accepting what our parents offered us, and believing that change is possible. Though the events and culture of the 60s were fairly global, this time our technologies make it more so, with greater connection and simultaneity. The revolution will not only be televised, it will be live streamed. While the changes of the 60s were driven by culture, the middle class was doing fine. Families had jobs and little debt. Today's reemergence is driven as much by economics. Not enough jobs, too much debt, rampant inequality. Where nuclear war was our existential threat, today we face climate change, ecological destruction, technological disruption, and still nuclear war. So what happened to such values during and after the 60s? Some were resisted, discredited, and discarded. Some assimilated, adapted, and integrated. Where the good stuff failed to take root, what went wrong? Trump's election and administration signal that the overpowering reassertion of business as usual in reaction to the 60s, as laid out in the Powell memo in 1971, has led to a condition where change is no longer an option, but a necessity. Whatever you may think of the 1960s, many of the era's values and concerns have aged pretty well. While the whole Trump phenomenon challenges any assumption of progress, it's still fair to say that in social and cultural realms, 60s attitudes are on the ascendant. Marijuana is now some form of legal in over half the country. An African American was twice elected president. For LGBTQ and the disabled, strides have been huge. Yoga and mindfulness are now mainstream. Burning Man may be the most celebrated, but music and lifestyle festivals are everywhere. Millennials, perhaps more than any of their elders, take much of this for granted. At the same time, I believe the two 60s values that have fared the worst are caring for the planet and economic justice. Why? Follow the money. It is in the narrow and short-term financial interest of wealthy and powerful individuals, corporations, and industries to stall and prevent change in those areas. In addition, despite all the progress I just talked about in social and cultural terms, we're failing to fulfill another 60s value, our sense of community. We lost it, one technological innovation, one demographic trend, one geographic shift at a time. Perhaps we didn't notice the gradual loss, but the price we've paid for convenience and mobility is high. We need a rebirth of community, and that presents a huge challenge in a society where our pain, fear, and disappointment fuel tribalism instead. What are some of the more specific reasons we haven't solved these problems? We have too small a circle of concern. For many, it does not extend much beyond self, family, or company. And too often when it does, with religion, for example, it leads to identity conflict, us versus them. As a society, we take the short-term rather than the long-term view, made worse by corporations because it's good for sales and quarterly numbers. Old industries, and this is a huge drag, on not only whether we take the right actions, but whether we take them in time. Old industries use their accumulated power to delay and obstruct new ones. And with things like Citizens United, our politics have steadily become more and more instruments of that destructive strategy. We settle for the lazy belief that we've already tried and failed and assume we can do no better. We accept that we have no power and therefore no responsibility. As a society, we've grown to disrespect and devalue government and nonprofits, leading to vicious cycles, feedback loops, and self-fulfilling prophecies that make their work harder and their success less likely. Okay, so if the best of the 60s are emergent again in young people, what gives me hope we can do a better job this time? That we can achieve a deeper, more sustainable transformation of society this time around? First, technology. Notwithstanding the unique challenge of surveillance capitalism as practiced by big tech, where service is free and we are the product, and where we are manipulated at the level of neurotransmitters below our conscious ability to detect or deter, notwithstanding all that, the internet, with its interactivity and inclusivity, makes it easier to reduce material consumption. Decentralization in energy, media, agriculture, in production, 3D printing, offering to make makers of us all. Stuff dematerializes, becoming virtual and experiential. And we're connected. Where it took at least 4 months to organize the Vietnam moratorium, it took only hours to pull together the airport demonstrations in response to Trump's Muslim ban. We're able to interact with diverse others, unbound by geography. If you feel out of place in your small town, you are no longer alone. Second, in the 60s, the leadership was usually straight males, and unless the group was of color, overwhelmingly white. Chicago 8, one black, no women. Today, there's so much more talent to draw from. Women, black, brown, Asians, biracial, and LGBTQ. Look at TV commercials aimed at young people, if you want to see what I mean. And from every corner of the earth, two words, Greta Thunberg. Third, in the 60s, except for 100 beatniks in San Francisco and 100 in Greenwich Village, we were on our own. Today, there are millions among previous generations to join with younger people and support them. Boomers are older, wiser, and richer, some of us anyway, with time to get involved. It's an opportunity for us to make good on our early promise. My peers have been skeptical, suggesting that younger people might resent and reject my offer to join a movement whose name, 60s 2.0, pretty much calls for a new improved version of my own youth. Oh, they'll never go for that. They want to invent their own thing. They don't want to hear us claiming credit. But when I organized an intergenerational dialogue at my recent 50th college reunion between my classmates and current undergraduate activists and millennials involved in social impact, both sides seemed receptive to the shared values, the threads of continuity, and the potential for partnership. When I told one young activist that I felt we in the 60s had failed, he corrected me. You were just 50 years ahead of your time. You didn't have the technology. We do now, and we have each other. But this fall, just as I began to shape these ideas into something serious, I started reading about OK Boomer. This is Wikipedia. OK Boomer, to dismiss or mock attitudes stereotypically attributed to the baby boomer generation. Narrow-minded, outdated, judgmental, or condescending attitudes of older people. Resistance to technology, climate change denial, marginalization of minorities, or just opposition to younger generations' ideals. Where did it come from? The retort was first used on 4chan in September 2015, on Reddit October 2017, on Twitter April 18, and it started showing up in mainstream media in fall 2019. Notably, Taylor Renz's October 29th New York Times article, OK Boomer marks the end of friendly generational relations. As of early November, videos tagged with OK Boomer had been viewed more than 44.5 million times on the platform TikTok. I can't help thinking that the young people who buoyed my spirits may not be a representative sample. And the whole phenomenon was brought home to me this past Saturday. I was watching on some ESPN channel the 136th Harvard-Yale football game. As halftime wrapped up, protesters streamed out of the stands wearing both schools' colors, first 100 or so, and ultimately up to 500, demanding that the two universities, with their respective endowments of $36 and $26 billion, divest from fossil fuels. It held the game for almost an hour, and about 50 were arrested. The Washington Post had this headline: Students swarm field at Harvard-Yale football game, chant OK Boomer in climate change protest. And you could see the conflict play out in the comments to the article, with young people impatient for action on climate versus old folks impatient for the kids to get off the field and let the football resume. One comment stuck out for me, though. A member of the Yale band said it wasn't the protesters who were chanting OK Boomer. It was the band. The protesters, he wrote, would have never chanted something so juvenile. But a great number of media outlets repeated the Post's claim in their headlines, and that may be a perfect example of where we stand these days. Now, this is not going to be my definitive, well-researched response to OK Boomer. I've got a lot to learn, and I realize that at this point the phrase itself has become a media phenomenon, and it's possible that it may be a short-lived social meme, displaced soon by another phrase, another attitude. But no matter the fate of the meme itself, the conversation it's aroused expresses the feelings of its users and of its targets. Most say it's a response to years of boomer critiquing millennials, with the term millennials often coming to stand for millennials and anyone younger, finding fault with them while failing as a generation to deal with critical challenges whose consequences are going to impact them more than us. I'm interested in the interpretations and the meanings that emerge once we're talking about this, the questions it raises, and the conflict it exposes. My first reaction to OK Boomer was that it was a direct rejection of my approach that we could do something together, that the failures of my generation on big things like climate, democracy, racism, sexism, and inequality, and the likely consequences of those failures for generations to follow would disqualify all of us boomers from being true partners in change. But I'm beginning to see now, OK Boomer actually creates an opening for a realistic assessment of what we have to offer each other. OK Boomers, on society, our watch has fallen short of what's been called for with regard to a lot of the challenges I listed earlier. I can't feel satisfied when folks like Steven Pinker tell us accurately, perhaps, that on a macro level, things have never been better. That macro metric says we're raising the floor, maybe moving the middle, but I don't feel it realistically portrays whether our best is good enough to successfully deal with those big challenges. And it doesn't give those of us a free pass who can claim that we were always on the right side of a lot of losing movements and trends. We marched, we reduced our footprint, we volunteered, we supported environmental and social justice causes, we didn't vote for Trump. We were the young people who starred in the 60s. In our 30s, we had families. In our 40s and 50s, we ran things. And in our 60s and 70s, some of us amassed enormous power and money and have had a lot to say about our society's priorities and still do. And as we lived ourselves through all those roles, our society made strides in all sorts of areas. But we have whiffed on so many of the biggest challenges so far. And in so many areas, it feels like we're actually moving backwards, delaying the reckoning and the possibility of success. In the same way that our parents' generation shared the Depression and World War II and could rightfully claim some credit, some kinship in those shared experiences, shared costs, shared victories, shared lessons in defeat, in that way we are the generation that shares the 60s, but also the big problems we've created or ignored or made worse or just not done a good enough job confronting. We have allowed greed and cleverness to forge a society that doesn't care enough for its children, the natural world, or each other. If all our good intentions and actions over the years haven't been enough to move society where it needs to go, we need allies who share our ideals, and we need to be allies with them. Conflict over age goes back a long way, but at this moment, generational conflict is a distraction. If the challenges we face are big enough to turn us against each other, then they must be big enough to bring us together. My vision of 60s 2.0, boomers aligned with millennials and younger, supporting each other with strategy, communications, organizing, street actions, funding, to achieve our shared goals, and in doing so, transform the country and contribute to saving the world. I want the good and informed people of this country to raise their game. And one of the best hopes I see, the Bernie Sanders campaign demonstrated the model and the Trump victory declared the need, is a movement we can create from the fusion of OK Boomer and 60s 2.0 to capitalize on the shared values of significant numbers of our two largest generations. If such a movement exists, I want to join it. And if it doesn't, I'm dedicated to helping it emerge.
For this commentary and many interviews and articles, and to join me in pursuit of a world that just might work, go to terrencemcnally.net, terrencemcnally.net, or aworldthatjustmightwork.com, the same website. If you want to receive my weekly email announcements of guests and issues, plus links to 8 to 10 articles I choose each week to flesh out the conversation, sign up at my site or email me at temcnally@mac.com. You can find years of podcasts and subscribe at Apple Podcasts and most other podcast sites. Listen anytime, anywhere. Archives include Michael Lewis, Naomi Klein, Robert Reich, Van Jones, Connie Rice, Bill McKibben, and many, many more. You can follow me on Twitter at McNally Terrence. Thanks to G. Lee and Mark Maxwell in production, and most of all to you, my listeners. Please share this podcast widely.